You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening and welcome everybody to The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM on this episode 186 on the 12th of October 2017. Your one-stop shop for everything in the world of tabletop gaming. And can you believe it? We have finally somehow managed to wrangle three Dice Men in the studio.
Woohoo!
It's taken about 2 months to do it, but we've somehow managed to do it.
I'm just going to stay quiet so there just thinks everyone just two people.
Some people have got used to it. Yep. All the new listeners is like, three people? This is ridiculous.
Can't do it.
It's not going to happen.
No, anyway. So before we get stuck into the show, we just want to make a quick mention that of late there's been a hashtag that's been trending quite a lot around the world, which is women in tabletop. And we just wanted to mention the fact as three heterosexual, overweight white men, that's a great thing to see.
Exactly right. It is. Good to see that there are so many women in tabletop gaming getting acknowledged because... You know, it is seemingly a male-dominated hobby.
Yes. That was me being sarcastic, by the way, that yes, it is people like us that dominate this hobby.
We do.
And it definitely shouldn't be.
No, it should not be. Love it.
Yes,
so
it's awesome.
So it's great. Everyone deserves recognition. Everyone, regardless of shape, sex, size, gender, identity, anything else, as long
but
as
not
they
that
play...
other, but not that other thing.
No. As long as they play games, it's okay.
That was also a joke. I don't know what that other thing is. Either way.
Okay.
What's going on this week?
Yes. Tonight we're going to talk about a game that we played semi-recently. We're going to talk about what's coming up at Essen. We've even got a film review.
Whoa.
All of that and so much more tonight on The Dice Men Cometh.
Woo. It got sexy up in here very quickly.
All right, that was the Tiger Choir with All Time here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh because it's Thursday night. And what also happens on Thursdays?
We talk about comic books.
It's comic book day at our friendly local game store and sponsor, Area 52. Now, Leon.
Yes.
Got any hot new comic titles for us to mention that...
Actually,
our listeners might be able to pick up from Area 52.
For the first time in 2 or 3 years, no. Because I'm not reading anything new at the moment because I've read it all. I'm going back and reading through my vast collection I've had sitting there. I'm reading through Punisher Max again, which is the best Punisher series ever
written. Wasn't his name Frank?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Well, anyway, you can get your comic books, you can get your Funko Pop vinyl thingies, and of course, you can get board games, card games, role-playing games, Magic and all those other sorted card games.
You can even get chewing gum games, hey, Leon?
Yes, I bought a copy of Lie there the other day, which I've wanted to get for ages.
Ah.
So go in there and buy that because they have the Paco game stuff on the counter, and a lot of those games are really, really good.
There you go.
It's the size of a pack of chewing gum.
Yeah.
And now, probably as much fun.
Speaking of fun little quick games, Garth.
Hello.
We played another type of game recently, didn't we?
We did. Well, let's not talk about quick games. We'll talk about a fun game, though.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So we went to a board game convention not too long ago. Some of you might have heard of it. It's called...
Have we mentioned it?
So we did play this at BorderCon. However, it must be said that this particular game, which is called Alchemists, is a game that I own and I have punched, but I have not played my copy yet. And it's all because of you, Leon, and you, Mark, and you, Trent, wherever you may be, and probably other people as well.
Right.
Why? What have we done?
Why is it our fault?
We haven't played it with me.
Oh, okay.
Have you asked? We've discussed this.
Oh, nah. It's not important now.
Okay. Well, I played half a game of Alchemist once way back, I was going to say 2 PAXes ago. I think it might have even been 3 PAXes ago when it very first came out, where a good friend of the show, Aos, started to take me through and then we ran out of time. And so ever since then, I've been wanting to play it again, but it does require a bit of investment of time, but also finding someone who knows how to play it.
That really helps. So let's start at the ground floor. Let's start at level one, ground one, Alchemist School?
Well, ground one's not always... Level one's not always the ground floor.
Well, it could be level zero.
Okay.
So anyway, Alchemist...
Is there an elevator in this game?
No.
Oh.
But there is a tower.
Mm.
So Alchemist came out in 2014 by designer Mattis Cottry, and it's still to date his only game. So clearly he's done enough in his career now to move on to bigger and brighter things.
He's retired on that Alchemist.
Because he has lived the dream of finally doing what we want to do, which is become a wizard. Or at least an alchemist.
Yeah.
So this is a game that was released by Czech Games Edition, one of Vlada's company's games, but not designed by him. However, it does have a whole bunch of Vlada input in there in that it looks very Vlada.
Yes.
The humour in the rulebook is very CGE. One of the things about the Czech Games Edition's rulebooks is they always make them engaging. They always make you want to read them because they will explain what you have to do. Because you have to, because it's a board game. But that will make it fun and interesting and make you want to go through the whole rule book so that hopefully by the time that Mark tells you how to set up the game properly because he watched a video of it 2 years ago, that you'll be able to tell the rules completely.
They're always engaging.
Correctly.
They always have a few little jokes in
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what is this game? This is a game where 2 to 4 players are going to be competing alchemists, all trying to earn that delicious reputation. Now, Mark... Technology.
Oh, yes.
But before we get to that, this is a Euro cube placement resource collection.
Hand management.
Hand management. Man, bit of everything game.
Action. Do you say action selection as well?
Not yet. But it says it goes for 2 hours. But it's 2 hours after you've had an hour of game explanation.
Yes.
Because like a lot of the Czech Games Editions games, and you think about Dungeon Lords and Dungeon Pets and all of those kind of heavier games, they take a hell of a lot of explaining because there's a lot of iconography or symbology. There is a lot of, I guess, decision-making that you're going to have to make during the game where it can really impact your turn whether you cock it up right at the start.
Yep.
And it's just going to impact the whole of the rest of your turn. But in essence, you're trying to do a very simple thing. You are trying to be the alchemist with the highest reputation. The way you're going to get that reputation is by discovering what alchemicals are in each ingredient that then is made into something. You then want to publish those findings. The more you publish, the more points you'll get, the more reputation you'll have, the more the world will go, wow, well, you're a great alchemist. And then you'll get to feel better about yourself for a few hours. And it's that simple.
Yes.
However, how you do that over the couple of hours is, at the onset, I guess, quite complicated. Because you can go and find these ingredients, of which there are 8 different ingredients, all on different cards. There are mushrooms. There are
chicken's
leaves.
Feet.
There are chicken's feet.
Eye of Newt.
Eye of Newt. There's a whole bunch of different things.
Is there actually Eye of Newt?
There's a frog.
So excited there for a second.
But there's 8 different ingredients. And what you're trying to do, as I say, is figure out what is the alchemical component for each of those ingredients. Now, there are potentially 6 different alchemicals that make up for this, each ingredient. And each of them are made up of red alchemicals, green alchemicals, and blue. Within those 3 colours, you've got positive and negative attributes within each colour. So someone who's invented math can tell you that there are eight ingredients, all of which are made up of 3 alchemicals. Within each 3 alchemicals, there are positive and negatives. So there's a hell of a lot of combinations that you've got to work through, which is why this game doesn't really take 2 hours to play.
Yes.
I've gone cross-eyed.
That's normal.
Yeah.
So on your turn, you might forage for ingredients so that you can get more cards in your hand because the ingredients are just going to be those 8 that you are trying to decipher. You can go and try and drink some potions because you might want to figure out what the hell it is that you're drinking, and the only way to do that is by drinking it yourself.
Yeah, it's a classic, isn't it?
I'll
just go and test this.
That's kind of what we do Thursday night after the show most of the time, isn't
it? Most of the time, but you'd be stupid to do that, Leon, when you've got a willing student. Because one of the places you can do is you can take your potion and say, here, willing student, how about you drink whatever the hell it is I'm going to make? And he'll go, or she'll go, yeah, of course, I love drinking that. And if you make a good potion, it's fine. But if you make a crappy potion, it's still fine for you. It's just the next player's going to suffer because they're going to have to bribe the student to drink
yes,
some more potions.
That's a really great mechanic in this, yeah.
It's really, really cool. You don't have to bribe students to drink weird things. They just do it.
Well,
I know because I was one.
Yeah, clearly one of the things is that this game, there's a lot going on.
Yes.
Now, it looks fantastic on the board, but I want to get to this alchemical and the ingredients and, most importantly, this app integration because, for me, this is probably where this game is set apart from a lot of other ones because the way it works is when you start this game, all of you will ideally have the app on your phone, which is just the Alchemist's app. One player will start up a new game, of which there are two variants, which is a really good system to get people introduced to the game. You've got the Apprentice variant, which is the slightly dumbed down version, although dumbed down is in inverted commas because it's still hell complicated. And then you've got the Master variant. So one player will get that on the app and it'll generate a random four-digit code, which potentially no one else in the universe has ever had, but that's going to be the key for all of the other players to sort of type that into their app so that the apps know what combinations of our chemicals are going to be making up the ingredients that you're going to be deciphering during the course of this game. Why that becomes important is when you actually go to test the ingredients that you've got, you will do that behind your secret player board, which is an awesome piece of board design, which has a little pyramid shape full of cutout circles where you can put the plus and the minus red and green and blue alchemical symbols as you are deciphering what is in each ingredient. Now, that's cool. It looks great on the table. It compacts down really nicely into the box. And it has this little shelf where you can put your two ingredients cards where you're going to use your phone or your app or your iPad or whatever. Take a photo and it will tell you how the alchemicals have played out.
Now, this is one thing where I had expected that what they would introduce is in the app as well, a version of that player board, because it is fiddly. And if you bump it and the bits fall out, yes, you can bring up your app again and sort of check. I've been waiting for the to have, though, another screen in the app that is your player board. And you can click on. I mean, I think originally when this came out, it was more tuned towards iPad and that you'd have one iPad and you'd pass it around. But obviously, phone apps have come a long way in the 3 or 4 years since then.
Yep.
And phones have got bigger as well, where people now, most people will be able to have their own app. But I know when I first saw this being played, it was all around with one iPad being passed around for that, that thing. But it is very clever. You can still play it without the app, but you've basically got to have one person whose job is to be the alchemical decipherer, and you tell them what things they combined, and they basically whisper to you or indicate on a bit of paper what the result was. And look, let's face it, that would be such a boring job.
That sounds god awful.
Yes, yeah. Which is why you don't play it that way. Of course, you always play it with an app.
But you know, if there's an EMP, if the replicants set off a nuclear bomb and we're in complete blackout, you could still play your copy of Alchemist that way.
Definitely. Now, there was some issues with the first edition. There were some printing issues that were on the player boards, but that got rectified in the second edition, which is great. But yeah, look, you're spot on. If you haven't put the coloured chits into the player board with enough vigour, then they might pop out. And look, it's only you that's going to sort of suffer, because part of this game is, yes, you want to find out the end that I was bullcrapping you, but you can go out there and bluff your way through a lot of this game should you want to. So although it is very much a Euro-style game, it does have quite a bit of trickery involved, and I really like that.
It's also, to me, not that these two are the same, but I thought of Wits and Wagers, how you don't need to be the expert. You need to know who amongst you is an expert.
That's right.
Because I can't remember what item it was, but I had an item that allowed me to see what the two things that
you
compare.
Yeah, one of the cards that you were using.
And so that then let me get a bit of an idea about what were you testing, and then seeing which hypotheses you picked, that then gave me more information, because you don't really have time to do it all on your own.
So
it's partly what you're gleaning yourself, but it's partly what you can sort of get out of other people by watching maybe which ingredients they take or which potions they're able to sell, what they've worked out and what they haven't worked out.
Oh, man, there is so much going on in this game. And now, there's other ways that you can make money, because money's important. There are going to be random adventurers that just come along for the ride in some of the spaces. And if you've got a couple of ingredients churning a hole in your hand limit, you might want to say, oh, hello, adventurer. Yes, I'll definitely sell you a potion. I might not guarantee that it's going to be the potion that you want.
Yes,
it might just be a potion, but I could guarantee it. I could give you exactly one of the potions that you're after, because there'll be these random six adventurer cards that just come out every turn, and at the bottom of each of those there'll be okay, well, this adventurer wants a red positive potion or a blue positive potion or a green negative potion. And if you can sell that to them, you'll be able to get gold. And gold is very important because it is hard to come by and you'll need it to be buying artifacts, which are these game breakers and game changers that can alter the game a lot.
Is the gold worth its weight in gold?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's worth its weight in cardboard because it's cardboard gold.
Well, you're an alchemist. You just can make gold, can't you?
Well, you can, actually.
Why don't you just do that instead of buggering around with all these potions? It seems to be a lot easier.
Well, one of the spots is actually just turning your potions into gold, so you can easily do that. That's fine. But you go straight into the artifact side of things. Now, there are only going to be 9 artifacts in the whole game, 3 per round, and they are game changers where, like you said, Mark, you were able to buy one, and that just allowed you for the rest of the game, every time another player got 2 of their cards on their player board, took a photo and was able to get a result, you were able to look at one of those ingredients and find out, oh, well, that player put 2 ingredients down. I don't know what the 2 were, but they got a negative green result and, oh, I'm going to have a look at one of those cards. And, oh, it's a frog. So clearly the frog has a negative green in it. That's amazingly powerful information. I didn't play the last time and get any of those because I just didn't have enough gold.
Yeah.
And it was just really, really tough. I think I did all right, though. But those artifacts are really, really crucial, and you want to be getting in there as quickly as you can, but you need gold to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about most of the mechanics of this game because that's kind of it. You'll find ingredients, you'll do stuff with them, whether it be sell them to adventurers or drink them yourself or get your students to drink them, or you'll use some of that knowledge to publish your theories. The last thing that you can do, which is the I don't trust you, Leon, is you can debunk a theory and go, well, you said that the theory of frog's feet was plus minus green, blah, 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 blah. You're full of crap. I don't believe you. I'm going to debunk you, going to get you wrong, and if you are proven that your theory is correct and the other player's is wrong, you'll get some more delicious gold and some more of that reputation, which is all how the game goes. You do that for 6 turns. At the end of it, all your reputation, like in life, gets turned into victory points. Player with the most wins. There is a sliding scale of how results happen and how they affect the more in front of other players you are. So that's something that I find is preventing a bit of a king-making attitude in this game, yes. Which is great.
Yeah.
So, look, it's full-on. It's Czech Games Edition. I really, really enjoy this game, but, geez, you need to play this a couple of times to be able to get anywhere near that playtime.
Look, it's certainly up there with Dungeon Lords is the classic that comes to me in terms of complexity, in terms of how it really takes you probably more than a couple of games to really get your head around how to win. I'm certainly nowhere near it yet. But, yeah, a lot of fun, really thinky. Look, it was great for Eos and Rachel, who played this game with us and showed us. I mean, I can see Leon's eyes glazing over because I remember, you know, he had such fun with Dungeon Pets.
Yeah.
It's certainly, you know, it's certainly in that area of the woods as far as complexity and thinkiness and puzzliness. So it's not for everyone, but...
But I think
the
theme...
It does look amazing.
And the cartoony style of it will get a lot of players through, but you've got to get through a second or a third play before it'll start to click. Because it was really interesting playing with Eos and Rachel particularly, because she'd not played it before. And Rachel is an incredibly experienced gamer.
Yes, very smart.
And she really, really struggled to get those connections between the ingredients in our chemicals at the start. And that's just a sign of how tough this game's learning curve can be.
In this day and age, though, when there's so many board games coming out and, you know, we only have so much finite time to play them or whatever else, is it even acceptable to have a game that you need to play like 3 times?
Yes.
If you say to somebody, oh, this movie, you need to watch it a few times before you kind of get the idea of it, I would just go, not going to watch it then.
I doubt that because I reckon you've watched lots of movies lots of times. But this is, see, the thing is, I think as the Dice Men, we have a skewered view because fortunately or unfortunately, we don't have the time to play a lot of games over and over and over again. Whereas I'm guessing a lot of our listeners have that collection which gets regular rotation of games. You might be playing the same 10 or 20 games over and over and over again and knowing all the nuances and the various paths of victories and what have you. And this is one of those games.
Yeah, and if you're doing that, you really want those games that are onions where as you take each layer off, you find a new level of depth, a new understanding of a strategy and different ways to win.
Exactly.
Anyway, look, talking about so many new games coming out, we've obviously got Essen coming up soon.
We do.
We're going to talk about that soon, as well as a film Leon has been watching coming up right now.
Is that the end of the song?
Yep.
Yeah, well, there you go. That was Black Cab with Breakout. It sounded like the end of a Stranger Things episode or something like that. And before that was Esther Holt with Seaside. Thanks for listening. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This week, thanks to Area 52. Now, Leon.
Hello.
Not just gaming, you're doing a movie review. Is that right?
Oh, it's kind of a movie. It's a documentary, which is kind of a similar to, you know, the field that we're talking about with board games, in the fact that it is exactly about the field we're talking about in board games. It is Shut Up and Sit Down. Recently, they put out a documentary that they have been working on for a few years now.
Yep.
The lads over there, so Quinn and Paul and Matt. I think Matt was the one who was behind majority of it. But the other guys were involved as well. And it was called Space Lion's Story of Twilight Imperium.
And I want to say, before we even talk about the content, hats off to them, or particularly Matt, who I believe was the director and editor, for a pretty much smack-on job. Like look, it may have not been the most interesting story, but the way you tied it all together, I thought the editing was very, very professional. So if that's the first time he's done something like that...
Yep.
Like what? Fantastic. I think Leon should tell us what he's done before you be talking to saying well done about sure. it.
Well, he does pop in at the end of it and basically say that it was absolute hell to make. And I have heard that from other friends that are documentarians. They're just like, yeah, that was an awesome 70-minute documentary you make. He's like, yeah, that took me 27 years to do.
Well, it already takes us 5 hours to edit this show. Jeez.
five days.
It just takes us days to put it up because we can't be asked. Either way. So it's about Twilight Imperium and the invention of the game and kind of the invention of Fantasy Flight itself. It's more of a documentary about Fantasy Flight itself than anything else. So the main people it talks to in the documentary is one of the executive game designer, Corey.
Oh, my God.
Corey Kanichka.
Yes.
Oh,
so,
man.
Who talked about when he first applied at Fantasy Flight.
Captain Chinbeard.
He sent in... It's amazing. He sent in a homemade Twilight Imperium expansion.
Yep.
That was one of the things he sent in with his resume, fully expecting it to get laughed out of the building. And it ended up being half the mechanics in one of the expansions they actually put out.
I reckon he could be distantly related to Abraham Lincoln or something. Because he's like if Abraham Lincoln and a board game had a child.
Very point.
He's a genius in board game design.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knows everything about gaming, but... Oh, man, he is an interesting-looking gentleman.
And then there was also Andrew, who was the creative director and the head of the studio, who still hasn't played Twilight Imperium.
Yeah, I found that quite amazing and irritating in terms of how can you get in the head of the people playing this game if you've never played this game? And it is such an experience.
That's because mainly his job is he is the components guy, he is the money guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the one there to kind of keep them in check and go, lads.
It looks pretty, but you can't afford it.
Yeah, but ease up. So that's more his thing. Don't go thinking someone who's never played this game has just designed it from scratch. No, 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 no. That's what Captain Neckbeard was doing. That's his thing. And then... Christian T. Peterson, the man himself.
Yes.
So he is now the CEO of Asmodee North America, as Fantasy Flight was being taken over by them.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the original designer of Twilight Imperium. He's also the brains behind Descent as well.
Yeah.
I knew he was involved in that, but I didn't realise he was the proper man behind that as well. So he's, calibre-wise, is as big as anybody in our hobby, which is pretty cool.
Well, I just found it amazing watching this documentary about the fact that this guy basically got his own first edition made and he went to the game studios and went, and then he went to, was it Gen Con? And
he was at a very early Gen Con.
Yeah.
And he was selling comics.
He was selling European comic books, which in the day and age of like the late 90s when comic books were already kind of going through a lull, and if it wasn't superheroes, people wanted nothing to do with it.
Mm.
He was trying to sell those things, and it just wasn't working. But as he said, he had this game that he designed himself that he came up with from scratch, and he did everything.
Yeah.
He packed boxes, he shipped them, he punched them, he did everything. He punched so many cardboard components that he got pneumonia from infected paper dust.
Oh, jeez.
And it almost killed him.
Oh,
so Twilight Imperium, the first edition, almost killed its creator.
Wow.
And the first edition of the game... The original print sold 1,500 copies, which he was blown away by.
Yep.
Especially considering he had to punch all the damn things himself, the poor guy.
But he also had to cut the cards because they just came. The cards weren't individual cards.
Yeah,
they came in A4 sheets. So you could have had to get your scissors or your guillotine out and go choppy, choppy, choppy to get all those delicious cards.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So the game, they're talking about the game is now it's coming up on its 20th anniversary. So they've gone through all the different editions. We did a big review on it. I think we've actually done two reviews on it because we played it so many years apart. And they're on episodes that somebody else out there would know that knows the show better than us. But check them out. They're good. So it's just talking about, yeah, so for the last 20 years, this game and how it's kind of built the company. It's not the company that's not the game that's made them the most amount of money, obviously, when you've got your Star Wars and stuff licensed. But it is the game that kept them afloat at the first, and it's the game most synonymous with Fantasy Flight.
And it's probably that flagship game for a lot of us gamers. We want to go out there and we want to spend 12 hours playing a game of Twilight Imperium just because it is that space opera. It's that game that draws everyone in because it's not just a simple pew, 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 pew style Star Wars style game.
Yep.
It is intrigue and diplomacy and a bit of fighting and a lot of screw you and a lot of time investment.
Yeah, so not only the fact that it's a monster game and takes a very long time, the reason why it is kind of lauded the way it is because it's a very, very good game.
It is.
And that's why it's still around after all these many years. So they jump straight ahead to talking about when they're first designing the new edition. And originally what they were thinking of doing was there's been 17 races over time added to this game, all different kinds of aliens, your space lions, your space turtles, all that kind of crazy stuff. Mm. What they were going to do is they were only going to have 6 races in the new version of the game, but they were each going to have individual minis for each of the different races, for every different kind of unit and everything they could possibly do. And then, a few months down the track, realized that would be ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
It would cost like... They were hoping to sell the game for around $250-ish at the time. This was a while ago now. But they realised doing that, it would probably end up costing them around $400.
Now, $250 is a lot for a game.
Especially American? $250 American?
Yeah, they're talking American dollars. So we have to mortgage our houses to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
So each of the 6 races, to get unique ships for each of them,
yep.
Geez, that would be amazing.
Yep.
But at the loss of so many other races. What did you say? 17 races.
So you lose 11 races. Mm. And they said one of the reasons they scrapped it, well, the main reason they scrapped it was the money. They said you wouldn't be able to do it. But they also said the kind of stuff they had in the Fantasy Flight editions of old, if they'd put it in like in nowadays, they probably wouldn't be able to make them either.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way things change with finance and whatever else. So they then decided that, no, we'll put all the races in there because why would people go, well, this new one's only got 6 in it. I've still got 3rd edition, which is still brilliant.
Mm.
People have still had it for years and years and years and it's still awesome. Why would I bother trading in for this new one? It's only got 6 races instead of the, you know, and it hasn't got the race I want in this new edition.
Correct.
So they went, we'll just chuck all 17 in there and go from there. Another thing they mentioned in there was that they considered for some time putting this game on Kickstarter, which was, it's a big point in the documentary because they are the biggest board game company in the world and they considered using this crowdfunding type system. It's kind of an unheard of thing. It is literally like video game developers going, the next Call of Duty is going to be on Kickstarter.
Yeah, just unheard of.
The next Grand Theft Auto that literally made $1 billion, we're going to put that on crowdfunding and see how it goes. It's just kind of insane.
It was really quite intriguing to be, you know, the way the documentary does it, that fly on the wall in the room where that conversation was taking place. Now, whether the conversation that we watched was the actual one or whether it was done during the process of the documentary to give us an insight, I don't think really matters. But it was really intriguing to think that, as you say, this company that is a behemoth in our industry was going, well, there's a very realistic chance that the only way to get the game that we want to be able to make is to put it on Kickstarter and then cross your fingers and hope that the general public and the board game public supports it enough to get all of those stretch goals, which is what it would have needed to being able to make the full game.
So what they could actually do, and what I would probably do if I was in their shoes, is they could make, and it would be so much effort, so now that I've just said that out loud, no, I wouldn't do it. But if they brought onto Kickstarter the edition that had the 17 races, all with unique minis for each of them, but it was like $1,000. But people would buy it.
They would.
People would absolutely buy it.
Well, you know the other thing you could do?
Yes.
You could have expansions where you get one race and their particular ships. Because I might love playing the Hakan, the Space Lions. Mm. And so when I have an epic game day, I don't even need to own the game. I'll come and play your copy or Trent's copy, but I'll bring along my own little Hakan ships and I'll play them. And you might bring along your Space Turtles, Garth.
I very well would.
You're a turtle.
Totally.
You know, like you could do that. And then, so therefore I'm only maybe up for $50 for my own little universe of
ships.
But
again, $50...
Yeah.
For some plastic that's not a game, when you can go and spend $50 and get a game or a couple of games, that's asking a lot of commitment from players, because the reality is you're probably going to be playing this with the same core group of six or so players over and over again.
And with that sort of plastic production, you're going to need a minimum size to be able to make it feasible.
Definitely.
So maybe not.
Yeah, so the game was...
But good idea, Mark, really. That's as good as your idea, Leon. We're smashing it tonight.
So the game was revealed this year at Gen Con on August 18th, about the fourth edition, and it's coming out for retail. There's still not a locked-in date properly, but sometime in the next couple of months. So that alone, they've kept the secret for all these years, even though we knew it was kind of coming.
Yeah, it was always the worst-kept secret that there had to be a fourth edition. And the 20th anniversary, so many people knew that it was coming up. So when it was announced at
Gen Con 50.
Yeah, it was met with a lot of surprise, but also a lot of, bloody time.
But to be announced and then come out before the end of the year, it's something pretty cool. Most people know from, like the video game world, a game gets announced, then you got to wait the next 10 bloody years for the thing to come out.
Yes.
So it is pretty cool. One other quick note I will make from the documentary, which would be amazing, was that they talked about for a while, they talked a lot about the box and fitting everything in the box. Mm-hmm. And there was a brief discussion of using those magnet flap things you get on the box. Yep. You know, those flaps where you just, they have that lovely little click and magnetic sound. They talked about making that entire box like that.
Yeah, wow.
So that you could kind of unclip it all and it kind of all unfold on the table. And I saw that and went, oh, God, that'd be amazing. I would just sit on my lap all day with that, just kind of flipping in the
That's
back.
That's what the Exploding Kittens box is for, isn't it? That's the best thing about that game.
Yep.
It's probably more game than that actually is a game. Yeah. So the guys did a brilliant job with the documentary. It's well worth watching. It's only 40 minutes long, and it moves along at a clip. But, I might have probably spoiled most of the most interesting parts of it. But
no, look, I think it is very well worth an investment in 45 minutes. I mean, if you're sitting in front of your computer, you don't generally need to be watching it either. It's because it's all about the conversations. It's really, a lot of it is just face-to-face interviews. They've got the long-term artist who has been working on it over and over again for years and years.
To me, that was another interesting conversation where the development of the art and how it was very cartoony, obviously, in the original version, and it's become more realistic, and then how they've developed, for example, how do you make the conversation about the sexy space turtle. How do you make a space turtle sexy? And see what they come up with. It's not a bad effort,
And just like anything, I mean, art style in the last 20 years, how much has changed. Same as anything in the last 20 years, how much has changed. So, yeah.
But look, this is one of a very few board game documentaries, and certainly one of the even fewer in recent memory. Mm. Now, Mark, we were having a conversation a couple of weeks ago, because I personally haven't seen any other board game documentaries, but you mentioned a couple of others from your heady days of the 18 Diggity 4.
So Going Cardboard, which was the first board game documentary I'd ever seen by, I think her name's Lorian Green. Mm-hmm. Very much around Gen Con and just almost like Vox Pops with game players and collectors, you know, talking to some people that have got like, you know, a collection of 10,000 games. Mm-hmm. When this hobby was really just starting to come of age, maybe that might have been about 2006, 2007, mm-hmm. something like that. And then the great guys at the Spiel, they made a video basically on the production of board games in the German board game factories after Essen. I think that might have been about 3 or 4 years ago, which very much is focused on the manufacturing process and, you know, the process that game companies go through to get it to manufacturing. All, you know, that there's a card factory and there's a box factory and, you know, there's all these people who basically put components inside the boxes.
Leon, what lost it when you said box.
Sorry, that Simpsons episode where they go to the box factory.
What's up, the box?
It's the brilliant 5 minutes of TV history.
But anyway, look, both of those, I can't think what the Spiel's documentary is called, but look, both of those I'm pretty sure are available on YouTube.
I hope it's called Box Factory.
If you Google the Spiel and board game documentary, you'll definitely find it. The other one, as I said, what was it called? Going Cardboard. Both of those definitely worth a look, but as I said, I was really impressed with this one. And, you know, look, I'm not a massive Twilight Imperium fan. I always love to play it just as such a big group event, but I did really enjoy this.
Yes, agreed. And it was good fun. We all enjoyed it, and I would certainly go and happily play 4th edition right now if any of you had it.
Well, if they could send it to us, I mean, it wouldn't be too hard, would it?
Excellent. All right, well, we better go to a break, and then Mark.
Yes.
A little bit of an Essen warm-up.
Oh, yeah.
All right, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll be back after this song. Yeah, 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 yeah. That was the Rogue Sharks, a Tassie act with Dracula Bed. I feel I'm too old for that music, but there you go. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This week, proudly sponsored by Area 52. I'm sure they'll get Twilight Imperium 4th edition as soon as it's available for retail, that's for sure.
They sure will.
Actually, I heard they had a very attractive staff member this afternoon, Garth.
They did, although very inappropriately dressed because it's cold and this particular staff member was wearing shorts.
With a Dice Man hoodie.
Yes, Leon.
Well,
what were you doing behind the counter today? You given up chocolate?
Well, I haven't given up chocolate. B, the shorts, because I've got very, very nice legs. And C, I was behind the counter because I was helping young Schwartz at Area make sure he orders all the bestest board games in the next coming months because he needed a professional and I am a person he knows.
All righty, Mark.
Speaking...
We only have...
Yes.
Maybe 5 or 6 minutes.
Sure. Well, speaking of board games coming in the coming months, the most important... I just want to tease a few. Look, there's 1,000 lists out there of Essen lists.
Yep.
And there's a lot of crossover between this and Gen Con, because what I've really observed is that Gen Con has sort of become the more important release, or at least tease and promo date for games now. Essen, there's a lot of European releases, so the German version, for example, of games coming out. But a lot of these were teased at Gen Con. The other thing we got into Gen Con. Yeah. And also Kickstarter releases, where Kickstarter, obviously, earlier in the year, but you're able to pick it up at Gen Con.
There
and
go.
A couple of examples of that, Dinosaur Island, which is the amazing game that I've backed by Pandasaurus, basically Jurassic Park the game, in the garish sort of 90 neon colours.
Yeah, well, this is Jonathan Gilmore, you know, Dead of Winter designer.
Oh, yes.
Who's got psychedelic dinosaurs.
Dino meeples.
Jurassic Park. Personally, it's too bright for me. It's just so bright.
I mean, yeah. The one main problem we had with Dead of Winter was not enough triceratopses.
Well, yes.
It had to be said. There was literally not even one.
Well, maybe this is secretly the next Crossroads game. But look, it looks amazing.
Yes.
I don't particularly like the art style. It is way too neon for me, but I hope there's a good game.
Well,
in
I would
there.
Have backed the non-neon version if there was one. But hey, beggars can't be choosers. And another one from Pandasaurus, and I did mention it in my Gen Con list, was Coaster Park.
Oh, yes,
where you're
yes,
building,
yes.
You're doing car drafting to build a real life roaster cola.
A roaster cola, yeah.
Where you're using marbles to test your roaster cola to see if it actually works, and you get points based on how far down the roaster cola the marble goes.
That's why you put a chicken on a beer can, isn't it?
Look, I reckon my kids would like this one. I'm curious to see whether it's actually any fun or it's just this cardboard coaster and not much game.
Now, look, speaking of other Kickstarters, I know I've also mentioned recently Merlin. It's a Steffenfeld dice rolling area influence game that was Kickstarted a while back.
It shouldn't be Kickstarted. Queen Games should not be Kickstarting these games.
So the retail release of that is going to happen at Essen.
That's because their shipping's insane.
It's ridiculous.
Also, Clans of Caledonia is a new economic and area control game where you're a clan in Scotland moving from the agrarian age to a more industrialised age.
I just love
Raisin
the designer's name.
Sheep.
The designer's name, Juma Al-Juju. What a
Juma
great
Al-Juju.
Name. Isn't that a great name?
Oh, Juma. Seen another probably other Juma.
Anyway, so now this has had a little bit of availability, but the wider release is going to happen again at Essen. You've got Agra. Now, this is one a few people are talking about. This is a big, heavy Euro game being described as Lacerda-ish, which is grateful. So India in 1572 was ruled by Akbar the Great, the third ruler of India's Mughal dynasty. Now, of course, notables and emissaries from all over the country are on their way to Akbar's birthday.
Okay.
And as an ambitious landowner, you've got to take advantage of this, of course, because these festivities are a golden opportunity for you to rise in stature and wealth by selling your cotton and turmeric and other sandalwood and sandstone and goods. So basically, you're using lots of goods to sell to people as they come past on the way to the birthday. As I said, heavy euro economic resource production and management game.
And as we talked a couple of weeks ago, artist Michael Menzel.
There you go.
Legends of Andor.
Also the Palace of Mad King Ludwig, which is, of course, the sequel to Castles, which is where players cooperatively build a palace, but it's not a cooperative game.
No.
So you're all building the same palace. You're putting down the tiles, and depending on which way you face them, depends on what points you'll score and then what your competitive partners will score, and with a big moat around it. So it's got a lot of similarities to Castles. Also a bit similar to Suburbia with the placement.
Yep.
Looks like a lot of fun, actually. And, yeah, you know, puzzly.
See, I'm still a fan of Suburbia over Castles. So I don't know whether this is kind of jumping the shark for me. I would certainly give it a go, but I don't know.
Anyway, moving on. Here's a game that has two things in it that I'm into. Heaven and ale. Well, I'm more interested in ale heaven. But this is where you are in an ancient monastery. And, of course, they were the first ones to brew beer. And now you've got to brew the best beer under the God's sky. And the fine art of brewing beer, of course, is all about timing and ingredients and having the right resources and the right number of monks. So, basically, you're competing with other monasteries to brew the finest beer, and you're upgrading. It sounds like the medieval version of brewmasters or something like that, okay. Brew crafters, all of those ones. By Egert, and it's a Kiesling game, so that sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got the first expansion to Isle of Skye, which is Isle of Skye Journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's done by Pelican and Pfister, and yep. We all love a good Pelican and Pfister. So it's a big expansion. You've got a personal player board that lets you progress in terms of strength, prosperity, and popularity. Except a lot of people are saying this really adds quite a bit of complexity and takes this from a light to middle to very solid middle game, and perhaps increases the AP quite a bit.
It's a lovely idea. Simple problem that nobody plays this game. It won the award. Everyone went, "We'll give it a crack." And then I've never seen it on a table at any convention or anything since.
Yep, I agree.
And the last one, the second expansion, but it's the big expansion for Terraforming Mars, is, of course, Terraforming Mars Venus next, where you've got flying cities and you're trying to make that poisonous atmosphere of Venus more hospitable. You've got 50 new project cards, 5 new corporations, more awards, more tags. Look, I just can't wait for when you've got to increase the moisture level of Uranus.
What? That must be the next expansion.
Absolutely. And look,
bollocks.
Essen, sorry. There is so much coming out. Did you know there's a comic section at Essen?
We don't have time for that. We've got about 30 seconds before we've got to get out of here, Mark.
And did you know that the last 4 years, the attendance
seconds.
Has been over 150,000? Anyway,
that's pretty amazing.
We have totally run out of time. There's so much happening at Essen. There'll be so much happening next week on our episode of The Dice Man Cometh,
which will be the last week before we go to PAX.
That's right. But in the meantime, you all have a great week. Play lots of games, and we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of The Dice Man Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, offering comics, books, card games, and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au. And find us online at thedicemencometh.com.